So, welcome back, everyone. This is part four of the podcast. And this week, it's not just going to be me rambling on and on and on. We've got a special guest in my friend Keith Wickham. How are you, Keith?
I'm all right. You've got me rambling on and on.
Yes.
So that's a double ramble.
Yes. Just to let everyone know, Keith is a voiceover artist and an actor. But his main claim to fame with me is that he restores, he does audio restoration for BBC Radio 4 Extra, amongst other things. Mainly lots and lots and lots of old radio comedy series, not just episodes, but series. So, Keith, yes. To start with,
yeah,
you're an actor.
Well, yes, I am, in theory, as long as I'm being employed.
So what have you been in?
Well, the main thing that people will know me for is being in Thomas and Friends, I think. I did 22 voices in Thomas and Friends.
Wow, did you? 22?
22, including the Fat Controller.
Yes.
And I was Gordon, Henry, Edward. I was loads. And I did that for about 12 years. I mean, Octonauts as well. Everyone that's got kids will know the Octonauts.
Right.
I do a few characters in that. But I've done hundreds of cartoons, and that's my main thing is animation. So I was in the Koala Brothers and Angelina Ballerina and The Secret Show. And I mean, loads, Cornel and Bernie.
Yes.
And there will be people out there. I'll mention these, and then every now and then I'll hit one and they'll go, oh, that one. And they'll remember me and
right.
Something. But, and I'm in a few at the moment. Goat Girl has just come out. I'm doing couple of others. Mojo Swap Tops is on CBeebies, so I'm still doing it.
Blimey.
And it's I mean, it's not as much as it was, but it's still there, and the business has changed considerably since I started in sort of 95, I think I started.
Yeah, sure.
So
wow.
So that's my main claim to fame. I was also, for your audience, I was also in Round the Horn Revisited. I play Kenneth, you see. I did Kenneth, and I did, I did Hugh Paddock as well.
Okay, yeah.
That was fun. That was good, but that was 20 years ago now.
God.
But yeah, that was a joy. It was an absolute joy.
Brilliant. So moving on to what we really want to talk about today is your audio restoration work.
Yes, you see, that's a nice little hobby sideline thing that turned into something else, because I was always into the tech. I always enjoyed the tech.
Yes.
And, because most actors don't. And it was quite handy, because you go into studios and I knew how it all worked.
Yeah.
And I would actually occasionally point out that there was something wrong with mic number four, or, you know, there was an echo, there was a delay on something or something. And I kind of knew all this before I walked in the door, and it's been very useful over the years, that
I'm sure.
When I did start to earn decent money doing voiceovers in the mid 90s into the 2000s, I could indulge this, and I bought Studer tape decks and proper amplifiers and proper computers and proper kit to do all this stuff, because I've been messing around with it for years. And I loved hi-fi and all of that, but I could afford then to indulge it. And over the years, it's turned into this little sideline. It doesn't pay very much at all, I have to say, but it's done for the love of it. And I got very lucky early on with the stuff I was given.
I was going to say, what was the first thing you worked on, or how did you get started?
Well, the big thing that happened was that I'd been doing on and off bits and pieces of putting stuff together, because Ted Kendall at the same time is doing it professionally for the Beeb.
Yeah.
And he was doing the Goons. That was the first one. And I got in touch with him, and we shared stuff. I supplied him with stuff, because I wasn't up there at the time. I didn't have the kit. But later on, I got lucky, because BBC 7 started, and I got hold of, from various places, tons of transcription service discs.
Oh, right.
Which I could run on. I mean, tons that I got from collectors and so on. And that was a huge thing. I got
many of which will probably have my fingerprints on. Carry on.
Yes, they will. They will. Absolutely. The other thing that happened was that BBC 7, because of my connection to them, they supplied me with a lot of transcription service tape runoffs.
Oh, yes.
And you will know this, and your listeners will know now, that the transcription service used to keep the edits they took out.
That's right.
And they put them on the end of the tape.
Yep.
In reverse, so they couldn't be played by mistake.
Yep.
But I got that. I got loads of copies of radio shows with the edits at the end of the tape.
Yeah.
And it meant that the off-air copies that I had of a lot of these, I used for templates.
Yeah.
I put them in a multi-track, used the off-air as a template, transcription service in the top, and the edits I could put back in where they were supposed to go.
Yeah.
And any that were, because they didn't keep all the edits, and any that were missing, I'd use the off-air copies to put, you know.
Yeah. So where would you find the off-air recordings in the first place then?
Oh, that was that's a huge, because I knew Steve Arnold. Friends with him. He was Kenneth Williams Appreciation Society. He was also involved with BBC Archives. And we gradually got reputation and we got sent stuff. So we would get collections sent.
Excellent.
To us. And one of the first big ones I got was a chap who had goon shows, but going back to the 50s.
Uh-huh.
And I got that way back. I got his collection in about the year 2000. And some of that stuff was...
This would all be quarter inch?
This would all be off-air quarter inch, quarter track as well.
Okay, yeah.
So it would be they would be done at a slow speed on a single track.
Yeah.
To, as people know, like MP3s, people compress stuff to get as much as they possibly can onto
it. That's right. It makes the tape last longer.
Makes the tape last longer, but it makes the sound quality not very good.
That's right.
And also, until I got four-track tape recorders, I was having to run off one track at a time or two tracks at a time.
Yeah.
And until I got also a very high-end DA converter, you have to do them at normal speed, but you can do them at double speed or triple speed.
Yeah.
If you get a high-end converter. And this Goon Show set was the first one that got me sort of started on doing it properly, because he had tons of 1950s Goon Show recordings, which meant that it was first broadcast stuff and not the repeats and not TS copies.
That's right, which, as we know, the home service or whatever repeats would gradually be edited and edited, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
As they went along.
And the edits would be taken out. Well, Ted Kendall had a lot of these as well, but he used the stuff that I had as well to do the Goon Show restorations that he's done twice now. He's done the entire series twice over the last few years. Yeah. And of course, that's improved things, added things, because over the years, new tapes come in and better recordings coming. There's a huge number now out there complete. The other big one I got around a similar time was from the BBC, was the I'm sorry, I'll read that again.
Oh, right.
And I got all the transcription service copies.
Yeah.
The tapes with the edits on the end.
Yeah.
And it enabled me to restore I'm sorry, I'll read that again, which Ted was intending to do, and they were intending to do a Penguin and BBC, but never got around to doing.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because it's a big job, partly because a lot of the material is quite difficult to get over politically now. It was also just money in the end. Anyway, I did the lot, and I also was very lucky because I got a set from a guy who was at Cambridge at the same time as the Acerta team.
Yes.
And he was in the radio group at Cambridge at the time. And he recorded some absolutely stunningly good recordings off air of I'm sorry, I'll read that again.
Yeah.
From back in the early series. And that set, the TS set, Humphrey Barclay's tapes.
Yes.
That I got because I had a mate, Ray Frensham, and knew Ray Humphrey Barclay. And I went to his house, got his tapes, got his scripts. And I managed to do the first big restoration. It was that I did the entire run of I'm sorry, I'll read that again.
How many episodes is that?
Oh, I don't know how many episodes. It's 10 years, but I can't remember how many episodes it is.
Got to be over 100.
It's way over 100.
Gosh.
But But the, I did that. I did. I'm Sorry Over the Again about four times because I kept getting tapes in. I kept getting new copies.
Yeah.
And eventually, it's now complete, and it, and the, all of them are done and finished, and they're out there. And Penguin were going to release them again. They were going to release them, and they didn't really get around to it. Some of the jokes are quite cringing.
Iffy.
and I know people complain about this, but actually I'm kind of on their side. If you broadcast, this is a big controversial subject, but I will always go down the line of, if you broadcast a show on the Beeb on 4 Extra, people can tune into it by accident.
Yeah.
And they don't know that this is an old show.
No.
And they haven't heard the warning at the beginning. And if you get a really off-color joke, you're going to think this is recorded by the BBC now.
Yes.
And you're going to, the difficulty here is that you might hear it in the car, with your kids in the car and stuff. And that, I've always been of the opinion that broadcast is different from buying stuff. And when, if you're buying a CD set, it's your problem. It's your decision.
You know what you're getting.
You know what you're getting, and you should be able to buy it complete.
Yes.
And there should be that choice. Me and Andrew Pixley were at the BBC for ages, emailing them, and Penguin as well, trying to get, because he was going to do the booklet and I had the files.
Yeah.
And we went at them quite hard trying to convince, and they did, to be fair, go back to the board several times to try and get this release complete. I came up with various strategies to try and make it work. It didn't work in the end. They didn't want to do it. They didn't want to risk it, which I think is disappointing. But I can certainly see 4Extra's point.
Yeah.
That broadcast is very different from buying something.
Yes, absolutely.
And some of the jokes really are quite awful. And, you know, the battered babies are available in shops now. You know, that joke. And even at the time, you could hear the audience wince. Ooh,
yeah.
You know, if you put them all together, they're quite, you know. So anyway, that was the big one. And then after that, they kept sending me stuff. So BBC Seven and then 4Extra would send me, again, TS tapes of various series, you know, Brothers-in-Law. And, what's the Marriage Guys, Marriage Lines. And
Marriage Lines, that's right. Not surprised.
Not in front of the children and, you know, loads and loads of these.
So, Keith, the tapes the Beeb were sending you at that point, are they their own masters or were they TS masters?
Yes, they were TS masters. Yes.
So they're short.
Yes, but they had the edits on the end.
Oh, of course. Yeah, okay.
That's the point.
Yeah.
And then I had off-air copies of nearly everything.
So basically, I'm thinking that, is this the way you do it? Was you put them both on the computer, start them at the same point, and when they start to run to change, then you can say, there's an edit there, and you can.
There's an edit,
reinstate.
And you find the edit.
Yeah.
And the off-air copies give you the entire show. So that
exactly.
Even if the sound quality isn't very good, at least you can see the show.
That's right.
And I did it with Steptoe & Son was another one I did. That was fun. But again, there was an overlap with Ted because every now and then I'd get in touch with him. He had a load of tapes of a guy, Peter Copeland, who was a head of the National Sound Archive, and he also worked at the BBC.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And he's got Peter Copeland's collection, and it's enormous.
Really?
And I got him to run them off, and so I got copies. And that's yielded tons of stuff. I mean, loads of variety, because he was into variety and comedy.
Right.
So that a lot of I just supplied a load of Frankie Howard shows. Mm-hmm. And there's a load of Ken Dodd. One of the Ken Dodds had the Beatles in it. They're broadcasting that scene before, actually.
Bloody hell, really?
Yeah.
When was that, Rob?
They did a 62, I think.
Gosh, very early.
Yeah, it was one of the last things. I think, if not the last, it was maybe the second from last thing they ever did for the BBC, because I think that was because of the Liverpool connection. I think they sort of agreed to do it. They were already, by that point, really famous. And they didn't need the BBC anymore. But they did this Ken Dodd show, which is rather the juxtaposition is quite jarring, actually. But the interesting thing about that recording, and it's going out on 4Extra soon because of the anniversary of the Beatles, recording, whatever it was. Anyway, the Ken Dodd recording is a live recording.
Yeah.
And it was them as a band and live. And the difference between that and the other stuff they did, the Top of the Pop stuff they did, which was overdubbed and maybe edited.
Yes.
This was clean, and it was them as a band. And they're not that together. There's bits of it. You can hear them sort of being a band.
Nice.
That it's a live performance.
Yeah, yeah.
And the audience were only there for them. You could tell, because at the beginning of the show, when Judith Chalmers introduces them, there's this massive cheer for the Beatles. No one cared about Ken Dodd.
No.
Then we'd watch Ken Dodd. And as soon as the Beatles came on, the audience would wet themselves. And then there's these dreadful sketches. very funny sketches.
So what songs have we got?
That one, I think, was I Love Me Do, I think it was they did on there.
Okay.
There's one, I think it was that.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Which was, that was the then current single.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it was just a one-off, but it was, yeah, you know, that came up. We found tons of stuff. And now the Radio Circle, which is me, Steve, Richard Harrison, and Austin Day.
Yeah.
We supply stuff to Four Extra and we get nice little credits. And the other thing, the other reason that we're now in there is because I did a documentary with James years ago for the 100th anniversary of the Beeb.
Oh, yes.
I bumped into this producer. And I bumped into him, interestingly, and this is a nice little story. A friend of a friend of mine, knew Barry Cryer.
Right.
And he was quite friendly with him. And towards the end of Barry Cryer's life, it was lockdown. And Barry Cryer was going a bit stir crazy. And this guy used to get us up between lockdowns to the pub near Barry Cryer's house.
Yeah.
And meet him and chat with him, and it was fun. But this producer was there one day, and I'd never met him before. And on the way home, I was talking to him about audio restoration, and he just went ballistic about this. And he said, "So there are people collecting this stuff and doing." I said, "Yes, yes, yes." So we ended up making a documentary called Raiders of the Lost Archive.
Yes,
which went out on the 100th anniversary of the Beeb. And we found, at the same time, a missing Hancock's Half Hour, which was a total fluke.
Which one was that, Keith?
It was the...
Blackpool Jungle.
No, it wasn't. It was better than that.
It was the new secretary.
Because we found, recently, and that we restored this recently, was the Visit to Swansea with Harry Seacombe.
That's right.
Which was extraordinary. But the one before that...
Was it the new secretary?
No.
No,
it was another one.
Okay.
And again, it was... Oh, it was the one with Peter Sellers.
Oh, of course.
Yes, it was the one with Peter Sellers. And I restored that. And we did the documentary at the same time about collecting things. And that sort of got us into, you know... And the Radio Circle, which Steve formed, on the back of the VRPCC, which is the Collector Circle, is now sort of a go-to place for these things, and I'm running off tapes a lot from various collectors.
Yeah,
and I don't think I keep saying this. I don't know what's going to come up, and I don't know what's going to be found.
Well, no, you never do, do you?
And then something does, and you just think you've got to the end of all this, and then suddenly something comes up.
Yeah. I mean, saying that, do you remember that time, Keith, I bought about four or five tapes at a car boot sale, sent them to you and said, is there anything on this? Because there was no paperwork with the boxes.
Yes.
And there was there was a couple of things from, it was television audio from Christmas 67, I think you told me. And it was couple of Cilla Black songs.
That's something right. Like that.
So Carl Boozer, even.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And other collections I've had from people who were producers or presenters.
Even better. Actors.
Yeah. I mean, these tapes, they come in and there's a ton of television audio recordings off them and some radio stuff.
Yes.
And I know it's like panning for gold. The vast majority of what I run off is useless because we've either already got it or it's not interesting or the sound quality isn't very good.
Yeah.
But then every now and then a nice thing will come up.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, they did recently broadcast some Kenneth Williams stuff. We found on a collection of Misalliance he did, which was a Bernard Shaw play.
Okay.
Back in the 60s. It was a Kenneth Williams in a straight drama.
Yes.
Wow. Which is unusual.
Yeah.
And that isn't in archives. And they couldn't broadcast it because it's so long. I mean, it's like, I think it's two hours or more.
Right.
It's actually really heavy going. But it's interesting to hear him.
Of course.
Doing that.
Yeah.
And that was missing. And the other thing was this thing he did with Percy Thrower where he was going around Suffolk talking with Johnny Morris.
Right.
And there were three of them. One of them's in archives and I've got one of the others and half of another one. So they're going to go out. They will broadcast them.
Yeah.
But it's fun, you know. I mean, I still find it interesting.
Well, you know, that's the point, isn't it? Especially you get a half a box of tapes with no paperwork and you think, oh, this could be gold. And then it turns out to be a couple of Slade albums or something like that.
Yeah.
Straight in the bin.
A lot of
but
music.
You never
a
know.
A lot. Yeah. The other thing you supplied was a tape you had kept, which was a unedited Batter Pudding Hurler.
The Goon Show. Yeah.
A complete Batter Pudding Hurler.
I'll quickly tell you the story of that. That was while I was at transcriptions in the tape library. And right down the far end, I can bloody see it even now. There was just some shelves, a cabinet, and there was about three rows of tapes, but they weren't transcription tapes. They'd been borrowed from domestic. And there was a couple of Archer's tapes. I don't know why they were there. And then in the middle of it was this, that little, if you remember, that little brown box.
Yeah.
It's a 10-inch
unassuming brown box.
And it was, and it just had a little label on it, which had no writing on it. There was no paperwork in the tape. And it was just sitting there. And it got to the point where I was either thinking of or I'd handed my notice in at transcriptions. And I thought, if I don't take that, that's going to be chucked in the bin. And if you look at the label really, really closely, there was in very fine pencil the word goons. That was it.
Yes.
And I took it home and I kept it in the loft for like 30 years and eventually gave it to me. And it turned out, because I never had a machine to play it, it turned out to be the dreaded Batter Pudding Hurler. But it was like, what? Because I knew there was something funny about it, Keith, because the reel was so full of tape, which was unusual.
Yeah.
So do you think that was a down the line recording for someone that was just for themselves? It must have been.
It had to be.
There was no
labeling on it, no markings, and it was a 33-minute copy.
Yeah. And it was, there was what, did you say it was like a 3-minute bit in the middle?
Yeah. There's a whole edit near the end. There's a whole 3-minute sequence at the end that wasn't broadcast. And also there was some slight mess ups with the microphones.
Okay.
The entire Max Geldre number is off mic.
Oh, right.
And they must have obviously re-recorded it after they'd finished the show. But the version that you gave me, he can't hit Max Geldre, which I think most people would go, oh.
Thank goodness. Exactly.
Thank goodness.
Dear. So, that was a great find, that is, because you
that
know,
was a
some extra bits and it's such good quality too. So that was good. So, just a few off the cuff questions, quick fire. Here we go. What's your favourite find?
Oh, it had to be the Hancocks.
Really? Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
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 So, have you? Was it your job to restore all of the Hancocks?
Yes. Not the series. That was Ted Kendall. But these two. The Navy Larks as well. We've found all the missing Navy Larks now. God. That was the other one that kept happening. I'm not a huge fan of the Navy Lark, but we've got the lot.
Yeah.
The Hancocks were huge because particularly this Harry Secombe one.
Yeah.
People have been after those for years and years and years and years and years.
So where did that come from, Keith?
There was a collection Richard Harrison had.
Really?
He lives in Lowestoft. He's another collector, and he goes to car boot sales and stuff like that.
Right.
And he runs off tapes. He hasn't got the kit I've got. He doesn't do it as fast as me. But when he has found over the years, he's found these two missing Hancocks. He's found a lot of other bits and pieces.
Bloody hell.
But he sends them to me because he hasn't got the kit to store them all.
So let's say that, I don't know, the geek in me wants to know what audio program on the computer you use to do the work with.
Adobe Audition. The up-to-date version, and it's very good. It does exactly what I want it to do. Yeah. I mean, it's not massively complex. I'm not restoring appalling stuff.
No.
You know, I'm not, generally speaking, what I'm getting is basically trying to get rid of a lot of noise and hiss and clicks on the records, you know. Most of my work, though, is editing it together. Most of it is restoring it to full length.
Yes.
And finding the best versions of things. The Steptoe & Sons was like that. There's a lot, when the 4X are broadcasting, you can hear the drop in quality because the off-air copies were the only ones to restore them from.
Yeah.
And occasionally you do get incredibly good copies. You get copies, you go, I can't quite believe this isn't a master tape, because anyone with an FM receiver and a decent tape deck would get that. But the two missing Hancocks that we found so far, mm-hmm. you know, the one with Peter Sellers and the visit to Swansea with Harry Secombe are gems.
Yeah.
You know, I think those, your batter pudding hurler. Mm. And I also think my restoration of I'm Sorry I Read That Again.
Absolutely. What was I going to say? And I do remember you told me you had some, did you get them off Peter Cook's wife? What was the last thing you did for Radio 4?
Oh, we did that one. What? That's,
he
sent you to see that one. I can't do anything with it. It's Peter Cook's last series for Radio 3. He did a thing with Chris Morris.
What was it called? That's right. I've got the CD of it. That's right.
Yeah, the CDs of the released shows are there.
Yes.
And very recently, because of the anniversary of Peter Cook's death, last year, I think, I've got the unedited studio recordings of those off some friends who worked in the studio, and they were the backup dats. And I managed to cobble together six more shows.
Wow. Because they were only short. They were only like, were they only
about 10 minutes?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, they're 10 minutes. And I cobbled together six more 10-minute shows, and they're really good. And we really tried to get them released. And Chris Morris and his agent and Talkback, who made the show, have absolutely no interest in doing it. They don't want to do it. And so we have tried, and it is in their court. I mean, I never wanted to make any money out of it. I just wanted them released.
Yeah.
And the fact the material's there at all is extraordinary, and I really did think that they'd want to do it, but they just didn't, and there's nothing I can do about that. I can't force that. I can't illegally release them.
No, of course not.
You know
what a shame. I think it was we've been here 5 years, so it's before that. There was a BBC 4 doco on Peter Cook, and I think in one of the, they went back to his house and the place was full up, wasn't it, of tapes and scripts and records and stuff. And I seem to remember there was a tape there. It was a small box, and it was like a Pete and Dud recording live from about a 64 or 65. And that's still sitting there. I remember seeing the box. It's like, wow. So how are you going to get your hands on that? Never mind.
I don't know. And I was quite pleased to see recently the Lowry thing on BBC 4, was it?
Oh, yes.
That Ian McKellen.
Yes.
Doing Lowry, and they were doing to tapes that this woman had recorded with Lowry. Oh,
yeah.
In the last year of his life. And she did loads and loads and loads of open reel tapes of recordings of him interviewing him.
Right.
And they lip synced it. So that he was Lowry and this other actress was the woman interviewing him.
Yeah.
And I did think, while I was watching it, that this makes my hobby a bit more sexy. And also, it's they did it brilliantly because the recordings are really good. And as I was watching it, I was thinking they were so lucky, because had they been the usual quality of just sticking a mic in a living room, it wouldn't have worked. But it was almost as if he was there.
Brilliant.
You know, they were really good recordings. And I am assuming they got rid of hiss, and I'm assuming they did some work. But they were basically brilliant recordings.
Yeah.
So that when he was talking, when Ian McKellen was doing it, it did seem like he was talking.
Yeah.
So those, that kind of thing, those tapes, they are just
lovely.
They're just brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, there was the one last thing from me was, do you remember when my friend Jeff passed away, and we had something like 400 open reels of his stuff, and we couriered them over to your place. There was tons of country music from BBC Radio London, which I don't think would have been recorded, Keith.
No, it wouldn't have been.
Because it was a regional station, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
There was a load. I think you told me in the end, out of Jeff's collection, there was something like 65 programs sent back to the archive.
Yes, something like that. And it would, and another collection came up similarly.
Yeah.
Was this the guy in West Drayton?
No, he was in, he's in North Finchley.
Ah, yes, it is a different one. Because there's a guy in West Drayton whose tapes we've got. Hmm. And again, it was a huge, huge collection. It's, again, tons of local radio. So he had a lot of Radio London.
Yeah.
And a lot of pirate radio stations.
Oh, nice.
But he recorded Echoes with Stuart Coleman, if anyone remembers that show. And the guests on that are extraordinary, because he used to have people on from the music industry as guests.
Yeah.
And this was back in the 80s, 70s and 80s.
Wow.
And they're really good recordings. This guy was a proper hi-fi buff, and they're really good. And there's tons of these interviews and tons of these shows. And he did a, and there was also some of those country music shows that you mentioned.
Yeah.
There was also another one on Capitol he used to record. And again, these won't be anywhere. Because Capitol Radio didn't keep anything.
No, exactly.
So, yes, I mean, that was an extraordinary collection. Ed Doolan was another one we got.
Oh, yes.
Ed Doolan was a broadcaster in the Midlands. He was a very successful broadcaster for years and years and years, and he recorded off-air television and radio and comedy and stuff.
God.
As well as his own shows.
Yeah. Did you do any of the Dad's Army radio stuff, Keith?
No.
No,
they're all the master tapes of those all exist.
Oh, they do they? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I know, funny enough, from another friend of mine, John, who's going to be a guest in the future on here, his brother recorded a load of things. And I can't remember how John brought the subject up when I was visiting him once. But he said, oh, I've got, I can't remember his brother's name, his tapes here. And he said, there's a tape here, I think it was one or two tapes, with the radios of Whatever Happened to the Likely Lads.
Oh, yes. Yes, we got those.
And apparently they'd all been destroyed. Is that right?
Yes, there were three. There were only three. There was one from each series. Yeah, we got those. I had a set of those anyway. And then a chap not far from me, where I live in North London, he offered us, again to the radio circle, he offered us his tapes, and he had a complete run of the Likely Lads off the radio.
Yeah.
And this was the Likely Lads, the one from the 60s.
Wow.
And he was good. These were good recordings.
Mm.
And so there was a complete run of them, and a complete one of Whatever Happened to the Likely Lads.
Yeah. Whatever Happened to the Likely Lads, was it like 13 episodes?
Yes,
13. Because I know that John's brother had, I think he had the last one missing, funny enough.
Right.
But he had 12. Yeah. And they did, it was BBC 7 then. I think I sent them the tape. Mm. And I think they sent me a CD of something.
Right.
It was just one episode. But I know they did use those on air for quite a while. Perhaps you've updated it by now.
We superseded those because the recordings I got off this chap, another Jeff, were really good. And so they've been superseded. And they're really good shows too. They're proper funny comedy, those.
Oh, have you ever done, I don't think you have, Keith, have you ever done anything for or with, I'm sorry, I haven't a clue?
Oh, only for me.
Yeah.
Yes, I have. I've got them all of them.
Funny enough, they have released quite a few bits and pieces, yes, haven't they, over the, but not recently.
They have.
No. Now, here's a question. What's the earliest programs of Izzy Hack that have been released? Do you know? Because I don't.
Oh, the first one. The very first one.
Oh, of course it was. That was a special anniversary one, wasn't it? I've got that as a double CD.
And it's, unfortunately, nobody's ever had a really good recording of that first show.
No.
They're all a bit iffy.
Mm.
It's a real shame.
That's right, because it was a double CD with a one-hour Christmas special, a new one. Sort of thing, with the first, on the other disc was the first episode, and it must have been something else on there. Wouldn't have been just that.
That one, unfortunately, yes, there's only really not very good copies at all of that one.
Carry on.
No, the rest of the series, I have got all of them.
Have you? Because I recorded when I was still at school, six from 73 off air onto cassette.
Right. Right.
But those are easily to identify because they're not brilliant recordings. They're okay to listen to, but I clipped out, to save tape, the intro and outro music. So if you've got them and then suddenly there's no outro music, that's probably why.
Everybody does them, does that. So many tapes I've got. Well, there's a tape thump.
Yeah.
It's right near the end. And in fact, one of the nicest, one of the edits I'm most proud of was on the end of the Hancock. It was on the end of the Missing Hancock.
Yes.
Because the credits cut out halfway through.
Oh, right.
And it was the one with Harry Secombe in it. And so luckily, I mean, really luckily, it was Kenneth Williams reading the credits.
Yeah.
And he'd already said, that was Hancock's half hour with Tony Hancock, Bill Kerr, you know, and his friend Harry Secombe. And then it cuts out.
Oh,
and
excellent.
But what he said after that, what we would have said after that, because it just cut and I couldn't leave it there, was just the producer, the orchestra, the writers.
Yeah.
And that was exactly the same as he said the week before on another show. So I edited them together and put some applause underneath it. And you can't tell.
Excellent.
You can't tell. And it was extremely lucky.
Funny enough, you're saying that I'm working on a little project of my own at the moment, but it's old film. I was given 8 hours worth of film rushes from 1981 in motor racing. And it's John Surtees, who was double world champion bike and car. And I've got some lovely, one section of about 3 minutes of the guys at Brands Hatch trying to, it was a demo day in front of the crowd, and he's displaying an old Formula 2 Ferrari. Now, it's cold and wet, and they can't get it started. So they have to push start it. It's one camera, and they follow the whole sequence, and the car goes at his handheld camera. And with quarter-inch sound, which I've managed to marry up, what a job that was, as you probably
know. Yeah.
And the car goes away from the camera to turn around and then come back. And as he goes away, the guy says, "Wipe that, will you?" And he wipes the lens with a cloth. And as the guy moves out of the way, the car goes past you and he pans with the car and it's a nice end shot. Mm. But as the guy wipes the lens, the sound cuts out. So for the last 12 seconds, there's no audio. So as you did with that, I managed to find some decent audio of the car revving up from previous dump it under the footage, and it works really nicely. And when I don't know about you, but when that works, you think, "Oh yeah, that's really nice."
Oh yeah.
No one will ever realise that.
No.
And when an edit like that works, it's like, "Oh, that's nice and smooth."
Yeah.
No one will ever bloody well know. Excellent.
No, I know.
That's great. Yeah. So listen, what do you reckon is the most interesting thing you've ever found? Because I remember saying that in Jeff's tapes. You told me, I think the oldest thing there was a 1964 interview off the Home Service with, was it Vincent Price? Can you remember?
Could have been.
And you said it was a really good quality interview for some reason, you know.
Oh, I can't say the most interesting thing. I mean, I just recently listened to a Peter Ustinov interview from 1956.
Yeah.
I think it was somewhere around there.
Yeah.
That was our television interview off air, which again won't be anywhere else. And then there was another one of Ustinov. I love listening to Peter Ustinov.
Yeah.
He in the early 60s, there was an hour long interview with him on BBC Two or BBC whenever it, whatever it was at the time.
It's
brilliant. I mean, you know, that kind of stuff is only going to be of niche interest, but it's
It's lovely.
It's brilliant.
He's always a good chatter.
Yeah, he was great. I mean, he was so good, and his mimicry was extraordinary.
Yes,
and, you know.
Carry on.
Yeah, no, come on.
No, saying that, someone's just sprung to mind as you're saying Peter Ustinov from the same era, who was really quite, and I remember him on at least on a Parkinson in the early 70s.
Mm.
And I think he was Danish, Victor Borger.
Victor Borger, yes. Yes, brilliant.
Him? Yeah, completely forgotten about these days, but he was, I mean, did he do a, what was it, an Oxford Union recording?
No, that was Hoffman.
Oh, that was it. Sorry, yes, Gerard Hoffman.
Yeah, Gerard Hoffman. And again, there was a load of tapes we were after for years and years and years, me and Ted, of a chap that used to record, produce the Beatles at the Top of the Pops and stuff in the 60s.
Yeah.
And he had a ton of tapes. I mean, a ton of tapes that he recorded.
That wasn't Terry Hennessy, was it?
No, it wasn't Terry Hennessy. It was one of those, though.
Yeah.
And the Beatles at the Beeb release had a lot of his tapes on.
That's right. Yeah.
And he had Goon Show tapes because the first job he had was a tape op on the Goon Show.
I know who that is. I can't remember his name. Carry on. Yeah.
And it was unbelievable, this stuff. And I got hold of him the week after he'd sold them to a record collector. And he said, this guy had bought them off this chap because this chap was down on his luck. So he still had the tapes.
Yeah.
But they weren't owned by him anymore. They were owned by this other chap. And it took us years, a decade or more, to get them off him.
The name I'm thinking, Keith, is not Terry Hennessy. It's Terry Henry.
No, not him either.
Okay.
And it just went on and on and on, this.
Yeah.
Yes. That was really annoying. But they were great because they were unedited Goon Shows. Yes. There was a load of stuff. There was a press call. There was a rehearsal tape.
Have they been released now, Keith?
Yes, they have. They got released on the Series 8 box set.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We got them just under the wire.
Have I told you the story about me saving some Beatles recordings?
No.
Transcriptions. Now, you've seen, you've got Top of the Pops discs.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen Top of the Pops 0 and Top of the Pops 00?
Yes, I have.
Well, they're the same recording, aren't they, on both discs?
Yes.
With three Beatles tracks.
Yes.
And
yes.
An interview cut in half on.
Yes. Well, that was the last thing they ever did there for them, wasn't it?
That was 64. It was Hard Day's Night and something, a couple of others.
It was at the end of their, that was just when they got famous, wasn't it?
And that's right. And back in about 1982, our rock music producer went down to the tape library and his job then to pull out stuff to be wiped. And basically, he pulled the tapes out. I would make a list, type it up. He would send it upstairs to his office. He would sign it off, and I would pull the tapes off the shelves, and they would be wiped. And then we'd save tape, and then we'd save space. Well, for some reason, I mean, the only stuff he was really looking at would be, let's say we're in 82, back like the previous year or 18 months.
Okay.
But for some reason, he went right the way back to the very, very first shelf, to 1964 and pulled out the Top of the Pop 0 master tapes to wipe. And I've gone, what's he pulled them out for? So I just quietly pushed them back onto the shelf and no one said a word. And they were used on Beatles at the Beeb, weren't they? Volume 1.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, I didn't get a royalty. Never put a couple of points off it, never mind.
The stories are just legion, aren't they? John Walters and people saying that they were in their office. That people would come in and say, only tapes that I can use.
Yeah.
You know, because they had to reuse the tape stock. It was too expensive.
Yeah.
And so you'd get all these bands being wiped, which is what this other chap took home.
Yeah. God, brilliant. God, dear, oh dear. So what are you working on at the moment, Keith? Anything specific?
No. All I'm doing is running off tapes from a chap in Edgware who has supplied thousands of tapes.
Really?
Thousands of tapes. I mean, over 7 or 8 years I've run his collection off. And
they 7-inch tapes?
they vary hugely, but he was recording on quarter inch, generally in mono, and generally cramming them on. And but they've supplied, he supplied a lot of drama. He was into drama, documentaries, features, not much comedy.
But the Beeb are still interested in getting that stuff back as well as comedy.
While Four Extra exists, there's a good reason for doing all this stuff. And and the dramas he supplied are quite brilliant, because a lot of that didn't get kept and a lot of it was lost.
Yes.
Some of the comedy that he supplied, he did Weekending, which which was quite interesting. I was in that for a while. But the his Weekendings were from the 70s.
Yeah.
And they're all missing. I mean, they're pretty much all gone. Because they were throwaway satire.
Well, they're topical. So, you know.
Yeah.
You repeat it a year later and half the jokes are unintelligible because...
Oh, you know, completely. I mean, even old. At the time, I don't think they were that funny. But but they're interesting because of the performers and the writers that came out because of Weekendings was a hotbed for training.
Yes.
Andy Hamilton and all those people, and and the performers, David Jason was in it for ages, and
of course,
Now,
do I remember you telling me at one point that? Do you remember that pastiche of Lord of the Rings called Hordes of the Things have gone
Hordes
missing?
Of things, yeah.
Do you remember that? It was funny. It was strange. Was it four episodes?
Was it four? I think so. Maybe six.
It was. Yeah, it wasn't a very long run.
It wasn't long. No.
Yeah.
That was John Lloyd, wasn't it?
That's right. Of course. Yes, that's right. So saying that, bringing that on to, have you ever done anything for Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy radio?
No, that was all Dirk.
Oh, yes. Of course
that was all Dirk Maggs.
Yeah.
The Horde of the Things, as far as I'm aware, the Masters exist of that. I don't think that's an issue.
Yeah.
But Lord of the Rings is being re-released soon.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
That was really well done.
Yes, I think it's one of the best versions of Lord of the Rings.
Well, you've got the radio for a start.
Yeah,
gosh, you know.
Yeah,
Michael Horden downwards.
It's fantastic.
It is.
I mean, and I remember it at the time. Yeah. I thought I always felt it was better than the book. I hate saying it out loud, but I always felt it was. It was Jane Morgan produced it.
That's right. I remember her coming to Ken House and editing a couple of episodes at Ken House for some reason.
Right.
I remember.
Right.
Yeah.
It was a huge production. Bill Nighy was in it, wasn't he?
Well, that's right. Was it? It was 26 half hours, wasn't it?
Yes, 26 half hours.
Gosh, you know, I used to record it off air on quarter inch on Sunday mornings at midday, something like that. Used to, first run.
Right.
Yeah. Bloody hell! I've still got them in the garage now, even now. So what are they doing for the reissue? Keith, do you know? Are they putting anything extra on it or just remastered?
I can't say very much. I'm involved only because I supplied the tapes, the files, rather, of the tapes.
Yes.
They are doing the 26 half hours, which has never been released before because they've always been the hour-long ones.
That's right. And am I right in thinking in the 1 hour of things, well, there's some slight edits? I don't know.
Well, this is the thing, and a part of the thing I'm doing a little note thing for the sleeves. They're doing a vinyl.
Oh God!
They're releasing it on vinyl.
Holy cow! How much is that going to cost to buy?
God knows. God knows.
That's going to be like £1,000. Bloody hell! Gosh. So is it just? Do you think it's going to be just a vinyl only release?
I don't know. I don't know the details. I'm not even sure I should be telling you, but actually,
it's all right.
It is happening. It is happening.
Right. And is that some sort of anniversary or are they just doing it?
I think it's just because the guy wants to do it. It's never been done before.
Bloody hell, that's a job, isn't it?
Yeah.
Gosh.
The mastering of that is just extraordinary.
I bet it is.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they've got music in it and everything, haven't you?
Yeah.
Saying
it's,
that.
It's huge.
Gosh.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you remember that bit? There was a bit in Hitchhikers.
Go on.
With Pink Floyd on it. Do you remember?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
There was a bit that got edited out.
Shine On You Crazy Diamond, I think.
Yeah.
Because am I right in thinking that the Hitchhikers radio, it was edited all over the place, wasn't it, at different times?
Yeah.
After First DX as well.
Yes. Yes. Right up to the wire. And there's a whole episode with these mice effects in it that got changed.
Really?
In the same week. Yeah. So unless you got the first broadcast, the mice sounded different.
Really? I didn't know
they
that.
They didn't.
Because I do have the quarter inch of the... It was really odd, wasn't it? Because the second series, I remember, went out 5 nights consecutively, Monday to Friday.
Right. In January, yes.
It was. That's right. Yeah, 1980, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yes,
I remember that for the Friday night, episode 5, I had to get back from the pub early to record it.
Mm.
I remember that. Otherwise, I would have missed it. But I've got my 5. It's still on
call. It's an extraordinary series. Extraordinary series.
Yes.
Yeah. It's been re-released loads of times.
That's right.
In various editions.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, mate. Well, let's wrap it up. It's been absolutely brilliant to have a chat.
That's fun.
Heard about the ins and outs of it all. I'm sure everyone will be interested. So keep up the good work, young man.
I'll have a go.
Well done.
the word young there is a bit of a misnomer, but I'm hanging in there.
That's it. That's more like it. All right. Well,
thanks, Gary.
It's really good to have a chat. See you soon.
Cheers. Okay.
Cheers. Bye-bye.